If we look at young animals, let's start with that one. Usually their requirements for trace minerals are higher than what you would usually see. And that has to do with the fact that there are obviously a lot of processes taking place within the animal that require trace minerals. But also from an immune perspective, they struggle more with maintaining the status quo, right? They're more easily challenged, and hence their overall requirements for trace mineral go up. Overall, their digestive system is most of the time still developing. So in these particular cases, you basically need to make sure you feed a proper source of trace mineral, because they're more likely to suffer from these anti-nutritional factors, or at least from this lesser availability part of the story.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Bioregion, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved. 84 million times a day, pets eat meals with ingredients from Trow Nutrition. We bring together the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending to unleash possibilities for pet food brands. Premixes are just the start. Turn to Trow for higher inclusion ingredients too, like proteins and carbohydrates, and highly sensitive ingredients like probiotics. With our palatants and base blends, you can feel confident about what comes in our bags and goes in yours. Learn more at TrowNutritionPets.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast, where we will take a deep dive into the science, trends, and innovations shaping the way that we feed our pets. Whether you're a pet owner, an industry professional, or simply interested in learning more about what goes into your pet's diet, this space is for you. I'm your host, Dr. Kate Shovler. I'm a professor of comparative animal nutrition at the University of Guelph, with a background in comparative animal nutrition and a passion for understanding how evidence-based approaches can improve the health and well-being of our animals and enhance our own lives. On today's podcast, we have Gavin Burboom from Trow Nutrition USA. Gavin is originally from the Netherlands and got his master's degree in human food sciences from the University of Maastricht. He joined Trow Nutrition R&D in 2016 after finishing his master's, focusing on the development of new feed additives, improving performance and digestion. In 2018, he combined this role with a PhD position at Wageningen University, focused on trace mineral nutrition in monogastric animals, which he finished in 2021. Upon completion of his PhD, he joined the Selco USA organization in January of 2022, supporting the mineral business in North America. He moved with his wife to Guelph, Canada, working out of the Trow Nutrition Canada office. In this role, he supported the sales force on their discussions with the bigger integrators in the US and Canada. In July of 2022, he joined the global Selco team as global program manager in trace minerals, extending his responsibility for technical support beyond North America and focusing on the monogastric business in the EU, Asia, and the Middle East. He moved back to the Netherlands in 2024 and took on the role of global category director in trace minerals, leading the global trace mineral team. Welcome today, Gavin.
Thanks, Kate. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And I am excited about continuing our conversation on trace minerals. And so for all the listeners, we have had Gavin on to start this discussion about trace minerals. And we're going to extend that conversation today. And we're going to go into some other considerations that everybody would like to consider around whether they're using trace minerals, how much they're using, what forms they're using, and other considerations when pet food companies decide on what their ingredients look like on their deck. So Gavin, I think we should probably start with reminding the listeners, what are trace minerals and what are their value in diets for dogs and cats?
Yeah. So trace minerals are fed in low amounts. That's why they're called trace elements. And they're actually, even though they're being fed at very low levels, very important for key systems that take place within an organism. They're either structural, they're enzymatic, and they control or at least are part of very important processes that take place within an organism. One of the most well-known functions, I would say, is its role in immune function, where in superoxide dismutase, for example, a very important enzyme that's a part of the antioxidant system, they play a key role from both a structural component perspective as well as from an active component perspective. And they're very important when we talk about companion animal nutrition, because companion animals need these trace minerals in order to make sure that they can live happy, healthy lives. And because they're trace elements and fed at very low levels, it becomes a check-the-box exercise for a lot of nutritionists, because they don't consider something that is added at these low levels to have such a huge influence on how an animal performs and how an animal feels. But it actually is remarkable to see how much of an influence they can have. And as such, it becomes very important to take into consideration which type of trace minerals you need to feed, and you need to add to your diet. And when it comes to these different types, and that's what we discussed in more detail in the last podcast, you have the inorganics, you have the organics, and then the last one are the hydroxy forms of trace minerals. And these inorganic forms are usually sulfates or oxides. So you have your metal attached to an inorganic form. These are usually relatively weak bonds, so they're not very tightly put together. And that obviously means that you have a high probability of having a soluble metal and hence a reactive unavailable metal. On the organic side, usually what you have there is you combine it to an organic ligand. Most of the time gives a little bit more protection dependent on the organic ligand that you're using. And then the last group is your hydroxy group, where you're not making use of an organic ligand, but you still have what we call covalent bonds, so double bonds linking to the trace mineral, obviously giving it more stability. And the biggest difference there is that they're present in a crystalline structure where it plays around with solubility.
Okay, interesting. So maybe Let's expand a little bit on the effects of supplemental trace minerals on the animal. And if you wouldn't mind kind of overlaying that, I mean, we've got dog, we've got cat, so there's a few different considerations there. But then maybe also consider and provide the listeners with a little bit of idea about how you might consider trace minerals in different types of physiological states, whether that be different growth states. I think another aspect that a lot of formulators consider and we should consider with trace minerals is skin and coat health. And then third, and I know a little less about this, but the role of trace minerals in obesity, I think, as well, or where we could be going there with the physiological effects.
Yeah, so let's start with the first one. I think when you look at a diet formulation, let's start with that one. A diet formulation can already affect to a large extent how available a trace mineral will be. And what I mean by that is that there are certain factors in a formulation, which we call anti-nutritional factors, that can affect whether or not a trace mineral will be available. Now, the most well-known one in the animal feed industry altogether is phytate or phytic acid, which can be a problem in companion animal feeds, although much less so as what we would see in production animals. But what you have with these anti-nutritional factors is that they can bind to your trace mineral. And again, when we take into consideration these different sources, if you take an inorganic source that is relatively weakly connected to its ligand, the likelihood of that falling apart and that trace mineral binding to this anti-nutritional factor is actually quite high. Once bound to such an anti-nutritional factor, it can pretty much mean that the animal can no longer absorb that metal and hence use it, which obviously has detrimental effects in the long run, for example, on skin and coat, which you just elaborated to. Now, if you use an organic or if you use a hydroxy trace mineral source, you can lower the chances of such a thing happening. Now, the thing with these trace minerals is that besides these anti-nutritional factors, they actually compete with each other as well. That makes it very interesting, but it also means that you need to take into consideration what you're doing with, for example, copper. with regards to your availability of zinc, or what you need to do with your manganese in terms of your availability of iron, and the other way around. And that has to do with the fact that there are some specific transporters in the gastrointestinal tract that have a higher affinity, so a higher likelihood of absorbing the metal of choice. But it's all an affinity game. And affinity is one thing. It's also the amount that's simply there. Because if there is a lot of another trace mineral, so let's take manganese and iron as an example. If there's a lot of iron, there will be much more iron competing for that transporter than there will be manganese. And hence, your manganese absorption will diminish. So these are all things that you have to take into consideration when you start looking at things from a formulator perspective or from a nutritional perspective. Now, the second thing that you asked was, what does it mean for different life phases? Basically, if we look at young animals, let's start with that one. Usually their requirements for trace minerals are higher than what you would usually see. And that has to do with the fact that there are obviously a lot of processes taking place within the animal that require trace minerals. But also from an immune perspective, they struggle more with maintaining the status quo, right? They're more easily challenged, and hence their overall requirements for trace mineral go up. Overall, their digestive system is most of the time still developing. So in these particular cases, you basically need to make sure you feed a proper source of trace mineral, because they're more likely to suffer from these anti-nutritional factors, or at least from this lesser availability part of the story. So predominantly with these type of animals, it's important to take that into consideration. If we go to the exact opposite end of the spectrum, to the older animals, the exact same thing happens there. And we don't only see this in animals. We also see this in humans. So elderly people have larger problems with mineral homeostasis than younger people do. And one of the things, and it's actually very interesting research being done on the human side, is that obviously, bone strength diminishes when you get older. But what they've actually realized there is that a large part of that part of the population actually has mineral deficiencies, because they struggle more with absorbing trace mineral at the level that they require, because they have higher requirements. And because trace minerals play a pivotal role in maintaining skeletal structure as well, that could be seen as one of the reasons why let's say bone problems are a bigger thing on the elderly population side. So again, quite remarkable, even though requirements are so little, even for us as humans, that there's such a important aspect of it.
Just to build on that, one question is, so when pet food companies are thinking about different life stage formulas and formulation, it's really there's a large amount of flexibility in the adult animal is what I'm hearing. And so this is where you can flex between your options, whether that's inorganic, organic, or hydroxy. But at the in the puppy, and probably also for gestating queens and bitches, and then for the older dog and cat, this is really where companies should be considering the organic or the hydroxy minerals to help support mineral status in these dogs and cats. Is that correct?
It becomes more vital in these life stages to take it into consideration. It doesn't mean that if you don't do it in the adult phase, nothing will happen. Even within the adult phase, it pretty much depends on a lot of the, I would say, external factors that are in there. And that also makes it very tricky when you look at the research that's being done, because most of that research is being done in, relatively speaking, unchallenged conditions. And it's a pretty well-known fact that if you do research in unchallenged conditions, what you feed matters less. But we all know no dog lives a perfect life in the sense that it never gets challenged, right? It's the nature of life. And I think to that regard, it's important to take it into consideration always. But if there is a point in time where you have to make decisions, can be from an economical point of view, for example, then the life stage by which you can take that is most likely going to be the adult phase. To some extent, call it an insurance policy, right? You have an insurance policy for a reason. We all hope we never have to use it, but we feel very comfortable if we do have to use it that we have it. And I feel sometimes the same way about trace minerals.
Makes sense. And applies to a bunch of the macronutrients as well. Flexibility substantial when nothing's happening, but a bacterial or a viral exposure, any kind of sports injury, all these things amp up the nutrient, at least nutrient demands.
Well, and especially there with exercise, that's a good topic. If you're talking about dogs that are very active, in those particular cases, for sure, in terms of maintenance, right, that system's getting pressured a whole lot more, their relative requirements will be substantially higher than what you would have with a dog that exercises less. So that's a consideration to take into account too.
Yeah, I think a lot of people sometimes don't appreciate that minerals, not all minerals are electrolytes, but all the electrolytes are minerals and all the minerals are metals. So there's kind of a balance among all of them with consideration of all these other external factors that control demand for these in essence. So interesting. And then the third part of the question.
Obesity.
Yes. So if you could comment on, is there anything in obesity that would suggest we should be considering different trace mineral amounts or form of trace minerals as well?
Yeah. So there are some studies being done on obesity, particularly with regards to zinc metabolism, because there are some indications that in those particular cases, zinc metabolism is getting pressured. What we do know is that relative requirements go up in obesity states. Obesity usually is associated with higher oxidative stress. So an overall stress and oxidation process is taking place within the body. So generation of superoxides that start to react with whatever is around, right? So in those particular cases, these trace mineral sources can provide antioxidant capabilities to the organism and hence reducing, let's say, the damage that these oxidation particles or superoxide particles in this particular case can do. So they play a protective effect even more so in obesity cases than what you would see in regular cases.
Interesting. I'm not actually very sure whether a lot of people are addressing that in obesity formulas, but it'd be something really interesting to look at.
There is quite some research being done on human nutrition in that regard.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to have to dive into that a little bit and suggest that because, of course, obesity is a huge focus for the pet food industry because over 50% of the dogs and cats are obese.
Yeah.
So I'll most certainly pass that on to all the individuals that are super interested in addressing obesity. So when we think then too about these options, we've talked a little bit about overlays of different physiological states and how minerals are needed to a greater extent in any time that you have an immune response or inflammation. We also have to consider the selection of our ingredients based on the sustainability pillars. And so when we think about where these minerals are coming from first, can you give us a little bit of an idea of what the manufacturing or maybe it's not manufacturing. I think inorganic minerals come from mining, I think is largely where they come from, right? But if you could give a little bit of an idea of where these three sources come from and how readily available they are, so we have an idea about what the sustainability of the ingredient pipeline is.
So we don't have an infinite supply of trace minerals within the globe. There are certain trace minerals that are available at larger amounts than other ones, especially with the energy transitioning that's taking place. There's a larger demand of certain metals to make sure that at least from an energy transitioning perspective, we can do what it is that we need to do in order for us to at least get more sustainable energy systems. You can see that predominantly in copper, for example. So the demand of copper has gone up tremendously, which means that there's an increase in copper prices all across the board as well, mainly driven by this energy transition. And I think in that regard, more and more so is the question of sustainability coming to the table, particularly when it comes to trace mineral nutrition. When we look at the organic or hydroxy trace minerals, they all start with an inorganic trace mineral. They're the basis. And then when you look at where these inorganic trace minerals are coming from, indeed, it's mining. Although there are opportunities to, let's say, reuse certain trace mineral sources. So one of the examples is with the hydroxy trace minerals. That's where they originally came from. It was from reusing it coming out of, certain copper applications. So from a sustainability perspective, that was obviously a big plus because it allowed for use of different streams of ingredients rather than having to rely on these inorganic fractions. From an availability point of view, I would say the biggest regions where we have mines is North America, South America, and Asia. Those are the three regions where most of those mines are located and most of the production of the inorganic trace minerals take place. Organic trace minerals require, relatively speaking, a large amount of energy to be produced. And it kind of makes sense if you want to create a certain bond between two things that it requires energy in order to create that bond. With the hydroxy trace minerals, the biggest benefit that you have there is that the energy that is required in order to generate the concept is relatively less or lesser, which means that from a sustainability perspective, the relative carbon footprint that you would have from a production perspective would be less than what you would see in the organic trace mineral system. Another angle, let's say, from which we can review sustainability is that there's a lot of effort being put into whether or not we need to review our recommendations. Obviously, we're feeding certain levels. There's quite a large, I would say, safety factor put on top of that to make sure that we're feeding the right amount to all animals across the board. And what you're noticing more and more over the last couple of years is that people are reviewing whether or not other levels are both better for the animal as well as better from the environment because there's simply less excretion going into the environment.
Yeah, definitely. There's going to be that trade-off. So when we look at the chelated and the hydroxy, because their bioavailability is higher, you can supply less in the diet, which means that the animal itself has a lower impact on the environment. Is that correct?
Yes, and you can even, to some extent, influence the digestibility of other nutrients, increasing the overall digestibility of nutrients and hence, obviously, improving overall sustainability. I would say it's from multiple angles. It's improving availability of the mineral. It's improving availability from other feed ingredients. Plus, it's allowing, when we start talking about this requirement perspective and let's say the huge role they play in immune function, ensuring that from an energy partitioning point of view, and energy partitioning is basically where does the organism direct the energy to, it's more energy directing towards, growth, or at least lesser energy going into maintaining the status quo or maintaining the state in which the system is in.
Oh, very, very fascinating. So you can use energy metabolism as one of the outcomes that you could use to define trace mineral availability or requirements as well. So when we talk about that, and I'm a big requirement person. I largely focus on amino acid requirements that have their own experimental design methodologies and interpretation. But when we think about what we know about the requirements for trace minerals in dogs and cats, where are we with that state of knowledge?
With dog and cats, we're not quite sure where we are. The data that we have is fairly limited with regards to requirements. And the main reason for that is it becomes very difficult to look at animal requirements, specifically due to the fact that, like I said before, requirements are different in different life stages, in different formulations, with different sources. And hence, if you really want to establish what requirements are for all these different scenarios, you would have to run so many trials that in general, what we're doing at this moment is extrapolating. We're extrapolating data coming from other organisms, predominantly for companion animals, I would say from other organisms to then establish what it is or estimate what it is that dogs and cats require. Or we base it off of trials that were done decades ago. Now, that's not a problem that only is there for the companion animal space. We even see the same thing happening on the production animal side. Even on the production animal side, a lot of the requirements or establishments of requirements are done based on data that's generated in the 70s and 80s, simply due to this complexity, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, there is an opportunity then to start to consider doing trace mineral requirements in under a very tight set of criteria. So you eliminate or you reduce the impact of a lot of the variables that you've already talked about, right? So this is kind of one of those areas where kind of the basic science, basic applied in vivo science is needed versus more of a kind of epidemiological clinical trial approach where you're working with client animals. So we do still need some controlled animal studies to at least understand if there's any idiosyncrasies in dogs and cats around mineral metabolism that we might not be aware of.
You're correct. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So quite interesting. So we've talked about a lot in our previous podcast and today. And I was hoping that you might kind of do a, you know, 3 to 6 of the most important things to consider if you're a pet food company and you're approaching, for example, Trow Nutrition to do maybe your mineral blends and you're getting into conversations about trace minerals. What do you want those companies to come to the table with so you can help them provide the best trace mineral premix that you can?
Yeah, so that would be application. Where is it going? To which animal? To which life stage? Secondly, it would be where do you want to position it? And that's important in the sense of, is it going to be a premium line? Is it going to be an economy line? Because these are all considerations that you have to have when talking about what it is that you want to do. Again, because to a certain extent, you can consider them to be an insurance policy. You have to take that into consideration when you do review what it is that you want to do. And I think those two are the main important ones. And then the third one would be, what does your formulation look like? And then predominantly, what are the ingredients that you're using? Again, with the mindset of knowing that this overall formulation can affect what it is that these trace minerals have as a bioavailability. So those three things usually are the most important things.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition, we partner with a purpose. Benefits consumers want. Partnerships you need. Schooler is your all-in-one partner for an innovative pet food supply. With an expansive portfolio and global access, we can source and deliver in-demand ingredients year-round. Schooler provides access to ingredients that are animal and marine ingredients, nutrient-rich, clean-label, plant-based, freeze-dried, sustainable, MSC and Marin Trust certified, and more. That means you can offer on-trend products consumers want without disrupting production. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for that, Gavin. So to kind of bring everything to a close, I always like to thank you for sharing your information on nutrition, but then provide the listeners with the answer to a few other catchy questions maybe. So on the vein of trace minerals, is there a trace mineral, and you can't choose copper because you already used it as an example, but that we should be very cautious about the kind of long-term ingredient supply chain?
It will most likely be zinc. There's not a whole lot of zinc available in the world. So that's one to take into consideration. There's actually a review being done where they looked at which trace minerals from the periodic table, and they looked at all minerals, not only trace minerals, but all minerals from the periodic table. And they said, all right, to what extent do we expect them to be a problem in the upcoming 100 years, the next 200 years, or is supply never ending? And I think that's a very insightful picture, because with colors, they indicate which ones are green, which ones are red. And it's remarkable to see how many are red. And red basically means there is a serious threat in the upcoming 100 years. And zinc is one of them.
That was a fascinating insight. Okay, if you took a mineral supplement, what would you hands down look for in that mineral supplement? And I'm using supplement, not food here, but supplement.
I would look at the source of mineral that's in there. I do that for myself, but heck, I even do it for, I have a dog myself. I even do it for my own dog, just out of curiosity, which type is in there. And predominantly because the type determines to what extent it will be available. Again, it wouldn't make sense to take a supplement that contains high levels of inorganic trace minerals. It would make more sense, in my opinion, given obviously the knowledge that I have, to take a supplement that has organic trace minerals. So that would be the first thing I would look at. And the second thing would be how much. Because I know what requirements, relatively speaking, are for us as humans. So if they would be feeding substantially higher than that level, I would also know it makes no sense to do so. Again, because these trace minerals affect their availability amongst each other. So taking, as an example, a supplement that's very high in zinc can have negative effects on, let's say, the absorption of copper. So I would never take such a supplement.
Interesting. Okay. And I'll freely admit that it was spending time with the scientists at Trow Nutrition that steered me towards supplements that have chelated minerals in them as well. So I also look for that. And last but not least, if a company comes and their first and foremost goal is to make the most environmentally sustainable product on the shelf, and they're making that consideration for every single ingredient that they pick, what would you suggest?
From a sourcing perspective?
From an environmental impact perspective.
I would anticipate, or I would tell them, go for the highest quality of trace mineral at the dose that makes most sense for the life stage your animal is in.
All right. Excellent. Well, I think that those probably provided our listeners who are in formulation some considerations prior to approaching Trow Nutrition or other people. Now, I kind of wanted to point this out as well, is I think that there will be another podcast. I recently spoke with Trevor Faber, also from Trow Nutrition. And I think it's probably fair as well to point out that trace minerals, really the premix that they come in that you would end up sending, really need to be provided in a good blend with someone who has the expertise in blending premixes and making sure that they have a homogeneous mixture, because they're provided in very small amounts. And so their distribution has to be there when pet food companies choose to buy. Yes.
Correct. It's not a check the box exercise, Kate. That's the most important thing.
Exactly. All right, great. And again, if the listeners would like to reach out, how do they contact people at Trow Nutrition to have these discussions?
Well, they know my name now. So Googling my name is one way of getting in touch with people within Trow. But you would obviously also go to our website and fill in the contact details. But I'm more than happy to play a role in that as well if people find it necessary.
Excellent. Well, with that, Gavin, thank you so much for joining us again and sharing your tremendous knowledge on trace minerals. And we look forward to our next discussion with you.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.